This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 6th of July 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 5th of July 2012, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Your readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Karen Cream.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. Right, the announcements for this week... to repeat, I'm sure you've heard it before, your invitation to the Winchester Talking Newspaper Jubilee Garden Party, which will be held on Thursday the 19th of July from 5pm to 7pm in the garden of the premises of Richard Steele at Chesil House, 4 Chesil Street, Winchester. This is where we actually do the recording for the newspaper. So that's the Jubilee Garden Party on Thursday, the 19th of July, from 5pm to 7pm in the garden of 4 Chesil Street. If you would like to come, it would be a great help if we had some idea of how many people were coming. So there are two options. You can either ring John Richards, who's the chairman, on 02380 732 888. That's John Richards on 02380 732 888. Or you will find in your wallet this week, there's a little reply slip for the garden party. And all you have to do is put on, if you prefer to do that, you can just get your name written on the slip, tick yes or no if you're coming, and then put it back in the envelope in the wallet, and that will be returned to us. So we'll be able to find out who's coming. So we hope to see as many people as possible for the Jubilee Garden Party, and let's just keep our fingers crossed that it's going to be nice weather. Don't worry, if it is raining, it will then be held inside. But it's a particularly beautiful garden at Chesil House, so we hope we can be outside. The other important thing that is happening, which I'm sure you already know about, is that the Olympic torch relay will be coming through Winchester next Wednesday. That's the 11th of July. And it's only here for quite a brief time. It will enter, so to speak, Winchester at Kingsworthy at 14 minutes past one, the very precise timings. So that's on the junction of London Road and the A33 by the Coach and Horses, I think it is, pub there. And the torch will then run along London Road past Church Green to Bedfield Lane, and that will take 5 minutes from, according to the schedule we've got, from 14 minutes past one till 19 minutes past one. So if you want to see it in Kingsworthy, so that's the sort of between for that 5 minutes from about quarter past one through. Then the torch will get in the bus and be driven to the outskirts of Winchester and will start basically at Abbott's Barton by the nursing home in Worthy Road. That will start at 1:23 p.m. The route then is along Worthy Road, down Hyde Street, down North Walls, passing the old police station at about 1:40, along Union Street, then along Eastgate Street to King Alfred's statue, which will be at 1:44 p.m. Up the Broadway, past the Guildhall. It will then do a little detour down Market Street to the front of the cathedral. We'll be outside the front of the cathedral at 1:49 p.m. It will then go up the outer close through the square into the High Street again. So it will be at the Buttercross at 1:50. Continue up the high street. We'll be at the entrance to the Great Hall at about 1:59. So that's almost 2 o'clock, and then it will circle back via the station down to the Carfax, and then it will then go up the Andover Road. There will be it's going into Osborne School, in the old Lankhill School, from 2:07 until 3:09. Again, very precise timings. Presumably going in to show the torch to the children there, and then it will continue up Andover Road and will finish basically at the junction of Andover Road and Park Road at 3:12. So that's the route. There are various instructions given. Wear a hat and put on sunscreen in hot weather. Well, we should be so lucky. But basically, it's running through the centre of Winchester, Hyde Street, North Walls, Eastgate Street, up the High Street, basically from about, if you want to be there, sometime between 1:30 and 2 o'clock will be the time to see it. And as I say, it will be outside the front of the cathedral at about 10 to 2. So that's the information. There will be a little bit more about the torch relay later in the programme. Right, so I've gone on a bit about that. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 6th of July, the sun rose at 5 o'clock in the morning and will set at 21:22. That's 20 past 9 in the evening. Wednesday next week, the 11th, that's the day of the torch relay, the sun will rise at 05:04, that's 5 past 5 in the morning, and set at 21:18, which is about 20 past 9 in the evening. If you have any problems with your memory sticks or your players, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That's 01962 862826. And there is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it. But please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. Right, finally, on to the news this week. The main headlines in the Hampshire Chronicle are Silver Hill threat to High Street, motocross noise is still a concern, and remote alarm system to aid elderly care. So we'll start with the first headline story.
Silver Hill threat to High Street. The Silver Hill development in Winchester could pose a significant threat to the success of the High Street, a public inquiry heard. Economist Julian Chisholm said creating a new retail sector could cause High Street businesses to relocate. Developer Henderson Global Investors and the City Council want to provide 307 homes in the city centre along with retail buildings, a new bus station and doctor's surgery, if a planning inspector allows the compulsory purchase of the land. But Mr Chisholm told the inquiry, "The effect of Silver Hill could be to draw existing retailers from Winchester High Street to the new development. In my view, it means the High Street is under significant threat to its economic viability from Silver Hill if it goes ahead in its current form." But David Elvin, QC, barrister for the City Council, questioned Mr. Chesham's evidence because he does not have any planning or retail experience. He added, "You assume a lack of vibrancy has occurred since the building of the Brooks Centre in the 1980s. Has it occurred to you that the issue might be the Brooks is not attractive to the retail market? We know there are a large number of retailers who would wish for further or additional representation in Winchester." Meanwhile, Winchester architect Professor Robert Adam said the scale and height of the development did not fit in Winchester. Professor Adam, based in Hyde Street, Hyde, said, This proposal is profoundly damaging to one of the most important city centres in the southeast. It contradicts the local authority's own planning brief in terms of height and scale. If the CPO is granted, it is not in the public interest. But City Council Corporate Director Steve Tilbury reiterated its commitment to the project. Silver Hill has none of the characteristics to be sought in a vibrant and successful town centre area, he said. The council cares very greatly about the economic well-being of the town. This is an area of Winchester that is completely out of step in terms of quality and what it offers to the rest of the town centre.
Motocross noise is still a concern. Anguish over motocross at Three Maids Hill near Winchester shows no sign of abating. Some 60 people attended a public meeting to hear about the impact of the sport, now it's won permanent planning permission. After nearly a decade of controversy, the motocross operators can stage all-year-round events and restarted on June the 17th, the meeting heard. South Wanston Parish Council called the meeting at the Village Hall on Monday to hear how the sport is affecting people in South Wanston and also Littleton and Headbornworthy. Parish Councillor David Selby said, "A lot of people in South Wanston are still very unhappy. It was a well-attended and lively meeting." Mr. Selby said as well as the concerns about noise pollution and dust, there were also concerns about traffic danger. The exit from the site is onto Christmas Hill. He said, "The sight lines are not good. Traffic can go down Christmas Hill from the north, and you can suddenly come across a car and trailer leaving the site turning right. There will be accidents." Mr. Selby said villagers would be closely monitoring the operation of the site to ensure the planning conditions were followed. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, ward member for Wanston and Mitchell Dever, and chairman of the Three Maids Motocross Action Group, said, "Since June the 17th, there have been a lot of complaints about noise and traffic issues. Residents are reacquainting themselves with the noise and the impact on their lives, and some are finding it very difficult to do that. There is a lot of anguish. We are lucky the weather has been favourable with blustery winds and quite damp, so there has been no dust problems. But the noise has been quite prominent in South Wanston, whilst not so bad in Littleton." Winchester City Council approved year-round motocross on the site in March. The operator, Three Maids Motocross, plans to set up a liaison group and complaints process for any residents disturbed by the racing. Alongside race days, motocross practice is allowed every Wednesday and on restricted monthly weekends. The site can also hold corporate events 365 days a year and collectors' fairs.
Remote alarm system to aid elderly care. £10 million scheme for vulnerable. Hampshire's county chiefs are set to spend up to £10 million over 5 years on a remote alarm system for vulnerable pensioners living at home. The telecare system could be fitted into thousands of homes in a bid to keep pensioners safe, including those at risk of falling and dementia sufferers. However, there is no new money for the system, and Tory council buses aim to pay for it with savings on home care visits and care homes. The move is part of a wider shake-up of services, including Meals on Wheels and day centres, in an attempt to save millions of pounds. Councillor Felicity Hindson, Executive Member for Adult Social Care, approved going out to tender for a company to install the equipment and run the response centre that will come to the aid of pensioners. The council says telecare can be a device worn as a pendant and activated by pressing a button to call for help. But sensors can also be fitted around the home to monitor sleep and other activities and potential hazards such as if the gas has been left on. Councillor Hindson said, "Telecare can be used to complement traditional care or be used to replace it. For example, someone who requires help with tasks such as washing or dressing will be visited by a carer, but they may also have telecare to remind them to take medication and detect any falls. At present, only 260 elderly people have telecare provided by the council at an average cost of £408 per year, and the plan is to increase this to 6,000 by providing the system free to those in substantial and critical need.
Next, we have the death announcements. Bailey. Ellen Hilda Bailey, at home on the 1st of July, aged 88. Carr. Alan Thomas Carr, aged 86. Denham. Keith Norman Denham, on the 2nd of July, at home. Fernley, Roger Fernley, on the 26th of June, aged 67. Fisher, Samuel Robert Fisher, known as Bob, on the 2nd of July, aged 83. Ford, Raymond Sidney Ford, known as Ray, on the 25th of June, at home, aged 81. Green, Bill Green, on the 29th of June. MacArthur, Cynthia Ella MacArthur, on the 26th of June, aged 82. Orms, Thomas Orms, on the 1st of July, at the Royal Winchester County Hospital, aged 98. Pratt, Nelson Edward Pratt, on the 27th of June, aged 33. Rhoda, John Colin Rhoda, on the 29th of June, at Warren Lodge Nursing Home, Ashford, aged 77. And now we have Christian comment.
And this week it is written by Terry E. Hemming, and he has entitled it, We All Have a Calling to Serve. This past weekend, Winchester Cathedral was full, both on Saturday and Sunday, as our new bishop, Bishop Tim, presided over the ordination services. 15 priests were ordained on Saturday, and 15 deacons on Sunday. Something the national press will not notice any more than it will comment on the fact that between 1990 and 2010, the adult membership of the Diocese of London rose by 70%, or that since 1980, at least 5,000 new churches have been started in Britain. Yet it is not a triumphalist piece that I wish to write, the very opposite. One of the impressive parts of Sunday's service was the sight of three bishops going around washing the feet of all the newly ordained deacons, reinforcing what Bishop Tim had said to them earlier. Deacons are to serve the community in which they are set, bringing to the church the needs and hopes of all the people. They are to work with their fellow members in searching out the poor and weak, the sick and the lonely, those who are oppressed and powerless, reaching into the forgotten corners of the world that the love of God may be made visible. Service. That was what impressed me. On both days, people were offering themselves to serve others. Some were young, some not so young, some women, some men, some with families, some without. Yet all seeking not their own advancement, but to serve others. They had a vocation, a calling. That was in contrast to the news of further problems in the banking world and how there appeared to be a culture of profit, whatever the cost to others, or how many rules were broken. The Reformation churches have emphasized that all Christians have a calling, and not only the religious. This is not restricted to nurses and doctors, or teachers and social workers. All who work are doing so in response to a call from God to serve him and others in society. The young need to hear this message more clearly as they prepare for the world of work. Work is not only about getting as rich as possible, or being as powerful or famous as possible, but using one's gifts to make a difference. The national press may have covered the misdeeds of the bankers more than the numbers of people being ordained throughout the country. But let us celebrate them and both follow their example and set the ideal of service as a goal, especially for the young. It is not only the clergy who have a role to serve, but bankers, bus drivers, shopkeepers, journalists, lawyers. All of us have a calling to serve others through our work.
We now move on to letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle.
And this first one is entitled Swimathon, or Swimathon, depending on how you say it, swells the coffers of four deserving causes. And this letter is from John Pearce from Winchester Rotary Club. Sir, may I through your columns congratulate Peter Simmons College on winning the 2012 Winchester Rotary Charity Swimathon Shield, as reported in the Chronicle on June the 28th. However, your report did not say that the students also raised £600 for the charities we were supporting this year. It was for this that we presented the college with the shield. Over 150 swimmers took part in February, and together we raised almost £8,500, which we have recently donated to local charities. Firstly, we gave £2,500 to the Winchester Live at Home scheme, which provides volunteer support and friendship to older people who still live in their own homes and may have become isolated and lonely. We also donated £2,500 to the Winchester Church's Night Shelter, which gives direct access accommodation with outreach support to the homeless. We gave £2,500 to Winchester Street Reach, which provides support and guidance to young people at risk from the effects of financial and social deprivation, drug and alcohol misuse, bullying, crime, underachievement, homelessness or unemployment. Finally, we will use the remaining £1,000 to fund our own Rotary programme to support Winchester's senior citizens. As a result of the generosity of St Swithin's School, who allowed us to use their pool, the Wessex Swim School, who paid for the lifeguards, and individual Rotary members who supported the event, we had no costs to bear, and every single penny the swimmers raised has been donated to our good causes. All this would not have been possible without the support and participation of all those who took part in our swimathon. May I say thank you to them all. And that letter is from John Pearce, Winchester Rotary Club, Stony Lane, Winchester.
Make them pay is the heading of the next letter from Miss Sally Eames in Abbots Barton. Sir, we did not want the council to build on the Upper Brook Street car park. It's being done anyway. I had to pay £10 this year for my blue badge. When they close all the car parks that have no barriers, the blue badge holders will have to pay to park again. Some disabled people cannot use the buses, which is why they have the badges and special cars. The councillors have free parking permits. Make them pay and travel on buses, says Miss Sally Eames, Charles Close, Abbots Barton.
Please be patient. Baskets will bloom, says Christopher Turner. Sir, I'm sorry Mr. Bloomfield doesn't rate the Winchester hanging baskets mentioned in letters on June the 28th. I can assure him that they will and are growing. On my walk into work this morning, they were starting to look splendid. City businesses needed to take over the whole contract from the council this year. Our previous supplier was indeed excellent, but the bid had to go out to tender for both flowers and watering as a single project. The new company was the best we received. They are good, with excellent results across the country. When we went to tender, we were worried about a hosepipe ban, but were determined to have a display that would last throughout the Olympics. We needed to greatly increase the number of baskets. Indeed, rather than cutting costs, we have increased the budget considerably. The flowers will grow. They will last for the full 3 months that we need, and there are 500 rather than the 300 we had last year. I believe most residents appreciate the time and money businesses spend on the hanging baskets, the bunting and the Christmas lights that we provide to make Winchester as attractive as possible. Christopher Turner, Executive Director, Winchester BID.
Rosemary Poole says, surgery, more like a public lavatory. Sir, were all the architects in the Western world asked to submit a design for the new surgery in the Silver Hill development, it is hard to think of an uglier one than that agreed by the planning department, as pictured in the Chronicle on June the 28th. It looks like a public lavatory. I realise that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and that I am getting old, but to accept a design of this sort for Winchester is sacrilege, even in a modern development. In the same issue is a picture of a house extension, so out of scale and inappropriate that it serves only to make the identical but unaltered house next to it quite respectable. That's from Rosemary Poole, St James Villas, Winchester.
Prospects good for council housing, says Councillor Tony Coates from Winchester City Council. Sir, Alan Wigley's letter about council housing in last week's Chronicle covered a number of points that I had to respond to. He raised concerns about building new council housing before sorting out the existing service. He was right in saying that until recently, 40% of rents paid by city tenants went to the government. The council had a backlog of repairs it couldn't fund and the future was very uncertain. However, this all changed in April. Government changes mean the city council now retains all rental income and can now deliver a well-funded housing service. We can spend over £4 million more each year on improving existing homes, a similar sum on building new homes, and also invest in improving the condition of housing estates. Council houses are allocated on a priority system. Any applicants can bid, and the bidder having highest need will be successful. Applicants from Winchester, Test Valley, East Hants and Havant can all bid for housing in each area. Movement between areas is broadly equal. Some Winchester sheltered housing has proved unpopular and vacancies have attracted few bids. On rare occasions, this could result in someone with low housing need bidding successfully. To address this, the council has reviewed its sheltered housing and schemes without lifts or too many steps and now offered to all age groups. The changes have been long overdue. However, the council can now provide better services to its tenants, start to build more homes and work with community groups to improve neighbourhoods. We encourage tenants to work with us to improve our services. There is a district-wide tenant group, as well as residents' associations and scrutiny panels. I would be happy to meet Mr. Wigley and any other tenant who is keen to see housing services improved. Tenants should contact our free phone number 0800 716 987. That's 0800 716 987 for further details. And that letter was from Councillor Tony Coates, who's portfolio holder for housing, Winchester City Council.
Commercialisation of the Olympics is the topic for Alison Georgiou. Sir, how exciting that the Olympic torch will pass through Kingsworthy, and how thrilling to hear Kingsworthy has its own torchbearer in 14-year-old Sam Smith. Sam was nominated by his proud sister after he was left wheelchair-bound by serious illness. But he won't be carrying the torch through his home village, but through Gosport 2 days later. So, who will carry the torch through Kingsworthy? It's John Devins, a Canadian-born visa employee who lives and works in Singapore. In an interview with the Kingsworthy Parish Magazine, he professes to prefer the Winter Olympics to the summer variety. Whilst I'm sure he is a top guy, and the residents will have a fine time on the 11th, it's a shame that blatant commercialism will be so prominent on our special day. Alison Georgiou, London Road, Kingsworthy.
Tread carefully, says Mrs. J. M. Filebrown. Sir, re the presence of Highland cattle and their excrement on Shawford Down, Chronicle, June the 28th, making it a no-go area for children, may I make just two suggestions to the parents? Teach your children to look where they're going, or move back to the city, writes Mrs. J. M. Filebrown, Boyettwood, Otterbourne.
The headline here is "No Better Place for This Waste Facility." And it's from Phil Gagg, Full Flood in Winchester. Sir, Malcolm Wright appears to have overlooked several key factors in his comments on the waste facility proposed for Mitchell Deaver Station. Letters, June 28th. What is proposed is an anaerobic digester, not a waste-burning plant. It is very important that we understand the difference. This will probably mean the majority of the incoming waste will be organic and the major non-waste product will be liquid fertiliser. Not much of this would come from or go to cities, even if they were to increase food waste collection and grow more food. It is difficult to imagine a better strategic location for such a facility. The adjacent A303 leads directly to and far from a vast swathe of farming land throughout the southwest that will easily supply the raw waste needed and consume the fertiliser produced. The additional traffic on the already appallingly busy road will not be noticed. I feel confident that, as someone who reads all sides of the debate, Malcolm Wright will now embrace the scheme wholeheartedly and provide strong leadership in the community to resist the dark perils of NIMBYism, ensuring that this sensible proposal is a great success and a benefit to us all. It makes sense to deal with rural waste in rural places. And that was from Phil Gagg, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Darren Fernley says, elderly are path of least resistance. Sir, re the closure of Cornerways Care Home in Kingsworthy, and further to the letter of Mr. Harfield of June the 14th, I can only echo his sentiments regarding the manner in which this is being handled. There are chilling echoes of Cherry Orchard Care Home in Andover, which, despite a 4,000-signature petition and extensive objections during the consultation, was closed towards the end of 2011. It strikes me that Hampshire County Council has been tasked to save money, and they see the elderly as the path of least resistance to do so. I realise Councillor Heinzen is likely to reply with well-rehearsed stock lines, and in anticipation of this, I'd like to know how she'd feel if her mother or father was in Kernaways and faced with summary eviction. Darren Fernley, Prince's Crescent, South Ham, Basingstoke.
Drew Beadle writes about residents exercising democratic rights. Sir, I was surprised to see Gavin Blackman, chairman of Save Barton Farm Group, state in his letter of June the 14th that Winchester City Council is, quote, undermining residents' fundamental democratic rights, unquote. Whilst I realise he is upset at the decision last year to support development at Barton Farm, in no way has the council undermined residents' democratic rights. The council, through its elected representatives, has expressed its view on the matter, but his group remains free to continue arguing its case up to and at the public inquiry. In May, there were local elections at which residents in most wards had the chance to vote. For several months beforehand, members of Save Barton Farm Group were regularly criticising Conservative councillors through your columns for the decision that they had made. The Conservatives gained two seats in Winchester, including one adjacent to Barton Farm, to win outright control of the council. Although Mr. Blackman may not like the outcome, it was a result of residents who exercised their most fundamental democratic right. That letter is from Andrew Beadle, Wentworth Grange, Winchester.
The final three letters are on a single topic, which is that of global warming, and they are in response to a letter which was in the Chronicle of the 28th of June, which was last week, by David Brocklus.
Global warming is no confidence trick, says Bob Whitmarsh, Winchester Action on Climate Change. Sir, I don't know whether David Brocklus meant to be mischievous or just to demonstrate his ignorance in expressing the litany of untruths and misrepresentations in his letter of June 28th about global warming. May I try to set the record straight? There is now a huge literature in scientific journals indicating that global warming is real. To call global warming a confidence trick is a travesty of the real situation. Not only climate scientists accept the reality of global warming, but insurance companies, Met offices, governments, their departments, and intergovernmental organisations, as well as many other scientists. Global surface temperature is subject to natural variations, e.g. El Niño, and may appear to have steadied recently, but the underlying trend over almost the last 50 years has been relentlessly upward. The oceans, which hold far more heat than the atmosphere, have been getting warmer for 30 years, and sea level rising steadily for over 100 years as oceans warm, land ice melts and aquifers are depleted. It is wrong to say the UN carries out climate research. Its IPCC assessment reports are based on a consensus of results by hundreds of scientists from around the world. One wonders why Mr. Brocklus chooses to call this research junk. His oblique reference to some emails hacked from the University of East Anglia as being evidence of fraudulently adjusted temperature records is absurd. Eight separate committees investigated this allegation and found no evidence of fraud or scientific misconduct. I hope readers will realise that global warming is a real problem. Rapid reduction of fossil fuel emissions is required for us to succeed in preserving a planet resembling the one on which our civilization developed. Bob Whitmarsh, Convener, Science and Technology Advisory Panel, Winchester Action on Climate Change.
Paul Openshaw says the need for renewable energy undeniable. Sir, so David Brocklus, in letters of June the 28th, thinks global warming is a confidence trick. Since I feel I will be unable to change his mind, he's clearly well versed in the subject, let me use a different approach, which I have used successfully on similarly well-read sceptics in the past. It is undeniable that the global energy requirement is increasing, both in the developed world, compare your appliances today to those of 20 years ago, and the developing world. It is also undeniable that we are using the world's carbon fuels at an unsustainable rate and will inevitably run out of them. If we wish to retain our current lifestyle with its dependence on electricity, we will need alternative energy sources. Skeptics may doubt our direction of travel, but most surely accept that renewable energy sources are necessary. Paul Openshaw, Hubert Road, Winchester.
This final letter on global warming is from Brian Shorter, who says that records show that the world is getting hotter. Sir, having read David Brocklus's global warming letter in last week's Chronicle, I would like to clarify just two of his inaccurate assertions. He says that there is no empirical evidence that the globe is warming. Temperature measurements have been recorded for decades and are freely available. It is beyond doubt the trend in global temperatures has been upwards since about 1910, although there has been little steady rise over the last few years. However, the hottest year on record was 1998, and the next 10 hottest years have all been since 2000. He correctly says wind turbines operate at about 25% of their maximum theoretical output over a year, a load factor of 25%. Over recent years, the load factor for coal power stations has been 46%, and for nuclear, 61%. These figures, which one might expect to be close to 100%, are mainly because of breakdowns and planned maintenance. Wind turbines do require backup facilities in calmer weather, as do nuclear, coal and gas. Until there is a Europe-wide grid, some non-wind backup power generation is needed. But such coal and gas power stations consume far less fuel on standby than when producing flat out. There is a financial cost of having lower load factors, but when they are not producing electricity, they are not producing greenhouse gases. I would hope that people welcome the large reduction in the burning of fossil fuels due to operating wind turbines. They slow down both the increase in greenhouse gases and the rapid depletion of fossil fuels so that some is available for future generations. That letter was written by Brian Shorter, Mount View Road, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to the historical items. And we have extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
200 years ago, 1812. On Sunday last, a melancholy accident happened just off the quay in Southampton. As six young men were sailing in a small boat, it upset and immediately sunk, plunging all into the water. Three swam ashore and two others were taken up lifeless, but by making use of the means recommended by the Humane Society, were revived. But one, John Elliot, a young man in the employ of Messrs Taylor and Moody of this town, sunk to the bottom and was taken up 2 hours afterwards, past all recovery.
100 years ago in 1912, Mr C. Castle of 28 Nuns Road, Winchester, gives a hint that will be helpful to many. I suffered for 20 years from rheumatism, he says. I was all but helpless, and 8 years ago or so, I was discharged from hospital as incurable. But Doane, spelled D-O-A-N, Doane's backache kidney pills, proved successful. They gave me relief when all other remedies had failed. Signed, C. Castle. Doane's backache kidney pills are 2 shillings and 9d pence per box, or 6 boxes for 13 shillings and 9 pence. Be sure you get the same pills as Mr. Castle had.
50 years ago, 1962. Referring to long-term plans for rebuilding the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Lord Northbrook, chairman of the Winchester Group Hospital Management Committee, said, "The hospital is going to be at least as large again. When things become larger, they tend to become more impersonal. I'm not suggesting a hospital with the traditions of Winchester would easily become an impersonal organisation, but I think anything that can be done to encourage local interest would make it impossible for that to happen."
25 years ago, 1987, Eastleigh Airport had its busiest 3 days last weekend, after thick fog over Jersey and Guernsey cut down all routes to the Channel Islands, stranding passengers for up to 36 hours. The fog closed in on Friday and Saturday, cutting off the islands to cross-channel flights. Passengers at Eastleigh were grounded overnight until the fog cleared on Sunday and flights began to leave the airfield.
That concludes the historical items. We now have the Chronicle editorial comment, and then that will be followed by first person.
So the editorial from the Hampshire Chronicle, serving the community for 240 years. Final arguments for and against one of Winchester's most important developments in years were being made at a public inquiry this week. The long-running saga over the Silver Hill Renaissance is set to be decided later this year. Developer Henderson Global Investors and the City Council want to provide 307 homes, along with retail buildings, a new bus station, and a doctor's surgery. They say it will revitalise a run-down part of the city centre and bring more shoppers into town. But this week, local economist Julian Chisholm told the Inquiry that it would be a significant threat to the High Street and could see existing stores relocate to the new retail space. If that happened, and it is reasonable to suggest some might, then it is also reasonable to suggest that any vacant High Street spaces would be snapped up. Winchester's High Street is a special place and will always be a major draw to both shoppers and retailers alike. What shoppers need is a mix of retail attractions, and Silver Hill should add to the many reasons to visit Winchester. The Silver Hill area has been blighted for 10 years. Let's not wait another 10 years before something is done about it.
First Person this week is written by Rosemary McMullen. She entitles it The Family Face That Lives On. And it starts with a quotation by or from Thomas Hardy. I am the family face. Flesh perishes, I live on, projecting tray and trace through times anon, and leaping from place to place over oblivion. Caesar sent a certain Roman general to command Fortingall, a small village in Perthshire. This soldier, named Haterius, must have had very strong features, for there are haters dotted around the globe, and I have just returned from a gathering of 100+. It was hosted by a half-uncle I had never met before, but whose face I instantly recognised. The cousin from America looked like me, the cousins from around England looked like me, and the cousin from Spain looked like me. That was for starters. The Kiwi cousin of my mother's brother could have been his twin, and family trays were popping up all over the place. My grandfather was in the Indian police and was not the only relative to work in India. Like many families, it was thought necessary to send their offspring back to this country to be in a safer climate and to receive an education. Unsurprisingly, these children stuck together like glue and contributed to their own Gollywog Gazette to be sent around each house in turn. Being a golly was a lovely thing to be in those innocent minds. It's touching to see how thoughtful even the smaller children were about each other. They even had an insurance scheme where any ill child received a sliding scale of remuneration. It was fascinating, too, to look at the early creative efforts of the children, knowing there are authors and painters in the family. News, sketches, poems and stories show their utter loyalty to the family and indeed their country. There is even a postcard proclaiming Kitchener needs you, which urges children to do their bit and learn their lessons in bandaging, etc. What is striking is how good their English is and how vividly they write, with stories of snakes, tigers and dragons, illustrated with sketches of dripping blood as the heroes win out every time. The family connections were vital and seemed to have been maintained in a rather impressive way. Now, of course, technology makes this so much easier. Emails with photos have been flashing to and fro around the world, and I've decided that Haterius was not so bad looking. He certainly bequeathed a certain twinkle in the eye.
Right, we now move on to items of general news interest.
This is about the St Cross fete, and the headline is "Traditional offerings make historic fete so popular." Visitors flocked once again to one of the oldest and most traditional village fetes in Hampshire. The Hospital of St Cross was packed with people for the annual St Cross fete, which has been running since 1864. John Pringle, one of the fete organising committee, said, "This is a very popular fete and we have been known to have 3,000 people come here before. This is very much a local fete, but we do get people come from far and wide because it is a big event in the Winchester calendar." Ron Stacey, 95, senior brother at St Cross Almshouse of Noble Poverty, said it was something the community always looks forward to. "It's a lovely atmosphere here. It's got a great typical village atmosphere and it's nice because we do a lot for charity." The fete raises money for the church and also relationship support charity Relate Winchester and Winchester Young Carers. Mr Pringle added, "We have a lot of great stalls here. We have a cake stall that sells out quickly because the quality of cakes at St Cross is well renowned. We also have a magnificent plant stall, and special thanks must go to Michael King, who supplied us with thousands of penstemon flowers over the last 20 years. Visitors were entertained in glorious sunshine by a variety of acts, including a Punch and Judy show, Morris dancing and a live brass band. Meanwhile, there was a miniature steam railway." There's a lovely photograph of people on the steam railway laughing and waving, and including a test your strength hammer and a carousel. But it was a sad day for John Foley, who has run the fairground events for 30 years, as it was his last appearance at the fete. He said, "I have taken my rides all across the West Country and up to Birmingham, but this is one of the nicest I have gone to, and I really mean that. It's a lovely place." Ward councillors for St Cross were also out and about showing their support for the fete. Councillor Ian Tate said, "This is just typical England here. It's a classic example of what this country is like. A fantastic community occasion inside beautiful grounds. It's quite breathtaking, really." Councillor Jamie Scott added, "I have been coming to this fete with my family for years and I love it. It's the best one around for me."
And following on from that, the Hampshire Chronicle has been writing snapshots from the past. And this one concerns St Cross. And the headline is, "The 60s St Cross fete raised £300 for hall improvements." And it's taken from the Hampshire Chronicle of Saturday, June the 17th, 1967. St Cross fete, held at the Master's Garden and Brethren's Bowling Green on Saturday, was opened by Lady Ashburton, who was welcomed by the Master of St Cross, the Reverend G.T. Carlyle. She was thanked by Commander Hilary Ewart, Vice Chairman of the Fete Committee, who expressed gratitude to her for sparing the time to come to St Cross and asked her to accept a token of appreciation in the form of a bouquet presented by 5-year-old Deborah Casson. Lord and Lady Ashburton mingled with the numerous other visitors and toured the many stalls and sideshows. Later, they had tea with the fete committee. During the afternoon, two excellent dancing displays were given by the Winchester Morris Men and a team of Scottish dancers. The fete was held to give an opportunity for members of the parish and their friends to contribute to the Parish Hall Improvement Fund. Undoubtedly, both these objects were fulfilled, as not only was the social side of the fete a great success, 700 people attended, but it also raised £300 for the fund. And as a little after note, the fete held on Saturday, the 2012 fete, that raised over £9,000, and as we heard, many thousands also attend to it. And there's an ancient photograph of Lord and Lady Ashburton with several stall holders, and they're the familiar throwing the hoop over little objects and various other games, people looking very absorbed and very interested.
Mayor recruited for Felix Fund. Visitors to Winchester were greeted by a unique piece of street art last weekend. Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Frank and Anne Pearson, continued a tradition in the High Street on Saturday by collecting coins for the mayor's charities. But rather than putting them in buckets, they encouraged shoppers to create a coin collage of a cat, Felix, the mascot of bomb disposal charity, the Felix Fund. It helps soldiers affected by improvised explosive devices, IEDs, and is one of Councillor Pearson's three official charities for his term. Councillor Pearson was joined by Army cadets and former mayors Councillor Mark Reed, and I beg your pardon, it's Councillor Mike Reed, and Councillor Richard Izard to help decorate the picture throughout the day. Money raised will also go to the Magic Wand Appeal at Royal Hampshire County Hospital and Bishop's Waltham Community Responders.
The headline is Girl, aged 15, uses knife to scare off burglar. A brave teenage girl forced a burglar from her home after confronting him with a knife. A man broke into a home in Paddock View, Littleton, through an insecure door at around 3 p.m. last Wednesday. But he fled after he was challenged by the 15-year-old, who had been alerted by the family's dog barking. Nothing was taken. There was a struggle in which the girl sustained a minor injury to her stomach before the intruder ran away. Acting Sergeant Russell Collier said, "The girl crept downstairs after she heard a disturbance and she basically picked up a knife and confronted the man. He then made good his escape. The girl received a minor injury to her stomach during the confrontation, but it was nothing serious. Police have not revealed what sort of knife the girl used, what injuries she suffered, or how she'd received it. The girl and her family declined to comment on the incident. But she described the intruder as white, in his mid-30s, tall and chubby, with light hair and a small beard. He was wearing blue jeans and a baggy light blue hooded top. The issue of householders defending their homes has been controversial, and last year the government changed the law to allow residents to use reasonable force against intruders if they perceive a threat to their property. Previously, force could only be used if a resident's life was threatened.
Olympic torchbearers ready for the off. Winchester residents are gearing up for the once-in-a-lifetime honour of carrying the Olympic torch next week. Several residents have been selected to guide the torch around their home city, while others will take it across other Hampshire routes. Peter Simmons' student, Kirsty Nash, is one of 13 people to carry the torch around Winchester and Kingsworthy on July the 11th. Kirsty, of Fleming Place, Colden Common, is a young carer for her sister Sophie, aged 21, who has epilepsy, cerebral palsy, and autism. She was nominated by her mother Sue, aged 40, a full-time nursery nurse, and she said she was shocked to be named among the torch bearers. Kirsty said, "It was a complete surprise, as my mum hadn't told me she had nominated me. It's going to be great, and I'm glad to be running in Winchester. My family are going to get the day off to come and support me." Sam Smith, aged 14, has been selected to carry the torch in Gosport on July the 15th, after inspiring the selectors with his story. The Henry Beaufort Secondary School pupil lost the use of his legs in October 2010 due to conversion disorder, a medical condition that left him in a wheelchair. Another person carrying the torch is Swanmore resident Sydney Dean, who was nominated by two city councillors, Therese Evans and Deputy Mayor Frank Pearson. Mr. Dean, aged 86, of Hill Pound, has lived in the area for 50 years and was nominated for his years of charity work, including the Mayor of Winchester's charities. Mr. Dean will carry the torch through Boscombe on July the 14th and said nothing would stop him completing the route. He added, "I'm going to get pushed around the route in my coffin if I don't make it to the big day, so I have made up backup plans." University of Winchester student Chloe Bond, aged 21, of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, will carry the torch in her home county of Essex on July the 6th. Chloe was nominated for her volunteer work in Asia and South America, as well as with Girl Guides in Winchester.
Row after 25 conifers felled by developer. A developer has been criticised for chopping down trees in a leafy Winchester neighbourhood. Residents living in Chilbolton Avenue say 25 trees have been wrongly felled as part of a new housing development in the road. Christine Thornton said the cypress conifers were cut down and several more notched, so they were now too dangerous to leave standing. Miss Thornton, clinical director of a psychotherapy organisation, said a council planning committee gave permission for Alfred Homes last year to build 12 homes on the site on condition the trees were protected. She said, "I was concerned about this development, so I went to the meeting and the condition agreed was the trees would be left at a height of 5 metres and left untouched until the end of the work. Most of the trees are already gone and nothing can change that. If the council does not now force Alfred Homes to build a 4-metre fence to protect us from the build and insist that they ultimately plant mature 5-metre trees, they will have hung a sign on the door saying to developers, 'Do what you like, we will do nothing to protect neighbours.'" But Greg Jocelyn, managing director of Alfred Homes, said the trees were legally being replaced because they were dying. He said, "We have consent from the council to remove these trees and they are not protected in any shape or form. These are poor quality trees and we are taking them down to improve the situation and we'll replace them with high quality trees as soon as possible, which will be better for the environment." He added a temporary fence would be erected to screen the development from other properties for health and safety reasons. However, Councillor Martin Todd, ward member for the area, said residents should have been consulted on the changes. He said, "Clearly something has gone wrong here. Local people saw a decision taken in public, after a lot of discussion, by democratically elected councillors, and unless there's a big change in circumstances, that decision should stick. It should certainly not be changed without local people being informed. We shouldn't have got to the point where local people had to put themselves between trees and tree surgeons to try and make developers stick to the promises they saw made at a planning meeting." A city council spokesman confirmed it had agreed to the removal of the trees. She added, "We will be checking that whatever goes back in place is suitable mitigation for what has been removed. We will be closely monitoring the site, and the developer will have to agree with us what they want to put back in."
A new bus link to Marwell. A new bus link has been launched to Marwell Wildlife near Winchester. Bus operator Excellibus has launched an X8 bus service from Eastleigh Bus Station to Colton Common and then Marwell. The hourly link operates 6 days a week between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. all year round, with peak journeys extended to Fair Oak Square. Excellibus Manager Director Gareth Blair said, "We are delighted to have linked our service with Marwell Wildlife. The park has so much to offer and we felt there was a link missing for residents of the local area. If the service proves popular, it would look to change the frequency to passenger demand." To help promote the link, a 10% admission discount is being offered at the park for those with bus tickets. Paul Simmons of Marwell Wildlife said, "We are always looking to expand our sustainable business practices and we hope this bus service will encourage more visitors to travel to Marwell Wildlife by public transport all year round." Bus times and details can be found at excellibus.info.
MOT causes a flutter. Feathers were ruffled at a Fair Oak garage when a pair of baby birds was found making a bid for life in the fast lane by hiding under the bonnet of a Land Rover. Mechanic Damien Down discovered the fluffy stowaways cowering between pipes and the headlights as he carried out an MOT on the Freelander at Harding Vehicle Repairs. Service manager Ben McAllister said, "I was called over by our mechanic and he said we might have to stop the MOT. I went and had a look, and basically there were two baby owls. It was bizarre. I had never seen anything like it in my life. Sometimes you get the odd mouse or dead bird, but never two baby owls alive. It transpired that the owner of the car on test was nearby Marwell Wildlife. The chicks were identified as little owls, but after it was confirmed they were wild rather than from the park's collection, they were placed in a box and released near where their mother was known to live. Gordon Campbell, Marwell's curator of birds, said, "They've now disappeared, and there is a chance that the parents have found them. They are robust little things and will probably recover okay." And there is a small picture of Damien Down holding one of the owlets in his hands. The owlet looks very happy and strong. It's got fluffy down and those huge eyes and the hooked beak, so typical of owls.
This next piece is from Belgarum. It's entitled Time and Time Again. Good to see that the two prominent high street clocks were working properly this week. For months, it seems, the clock at the old Guildhall and the one at Boots have either been running slowly or not at all. So anyone walking the pedestrian precinct has experienced those uncomfortable milliseconds of thinking they're running late or early because the wrong time is being displayed. But what can have spurred Boots and Lloyd's, based at the old Guildhall, to sort the timepieces? Could it have anything to do with the Olympic torch passing through Winchester next Wednesday, July the 11th? The torch will actually be stopping underneath the old Guildhall clock, outside Lloyd's Bank, for staff to talk to the torchbearers. Let's hope when they go wrong again, it doesn't take a once-in-a-lifetime sporting event to encourage people to get their act together.
Colourful additions enhance street. Three more of Winchester's popular decorated bollards have been unveiled. The trio of colourful pieces in the square are the result of a collaboration between local artists and three groups of local people. A tea party to mark the installation was held at the City Museum. Two artists from the Colour Factory, Jenny Muncaster and Rachel Alexander, worked with youngsters from the Carroll Centre in Stanmore, who were inspired by the Roman artefacts in the City Museum. Jenny and Rachel also worked with residents of Richard Moss House, a City Council sheltered housing scheme, whose bollard celebrates the Diamond Jubilee. The third group was Winchester and District Young Carers, whose subject was the Olympic and Paralympic Games. Councillor Patricia Stallard, portfolio holder for Communities, Culture and Sport, added, "We have already commissioned the painting of 18 other bollards in the square, which are looking wonderful. But we are delighted to be incorporating into the street these three bollards, which reflect the ideas of young and older people who live in the city." And there's a lovely photograph of resident Marg Robothan and Katie Morgan from Hampshire County Council unveiling the latest decorated bollard in the square, which is in the forefront of the picture and is rather lovely with painted on bunting and what looks like an old-fashioned 1950s television in one little bit.
Isabel's 500 words wins 500 books for school. A Swanmore pupil has beaten competition from across the UK to win a writing competition. Isabel Murray, aged just 7, won BBC Radio 2's National 500 Words Writing Competition. More than 74,000 short stories were received from children all over the UK. As part of Isabel's prize for winning gold in the 9 years and under category, her primary school received 500 books, which arrived last week. Isabel's winning story was called Coming Home and featured a young girl's train journey home with her little brother following the war and 2 years of living as evacuees with a Mrs. Brisbane. She said, "I love reading and writing stories, and I've always been really interested in what happened to people during the war. It felt amazing to win, and I would definitely like to be an author, as well as an actress, when I grow up. Her story was read live on the Chris Evans Breakfast Radio show by comedian and actress Catherine Tate, as the winners were announced at the Hay Book Festival. John Patterson, headmaster of Swanmore Primary School near Bishop's Waltham, said, "We are extremely proud of Isabel and very grateful for the books she has won for the school. We all know the importance of reading and writing, and the books will be truly appreciated by the children. Isabel's win has had a huge influence on the pupils, and I'm readily seeing and listening to more children keenly thinking about writing their own stories. We hope her legacy will continue, and more Swanmore children will continue to write their interesting stories for many years to come." And this article is accompanied by a colour photograph showing Isabel standing in the middle of her 29 other school form pupils. They are the class Y2B at Swanmore Primary, and it includes her teacher, Belinda Brown, and the headmaster, John Patterson, and they're all clutching each of these lovely, wonderful books, and stacked around them are piles of these books amounting to 500 of them. What a thrill.
Police voice concerns over bars' plan to stay open later. A Winchester bar has applied to stay open later, sparking objections from police and residents. Bar 3-1 in the square wants to extend its hours for playing music, dancing and selling alcohol to 2:30 a.m. on Mondays to Wednesdays, 3 a.m. on Thursdays to Saturdays and 1 a.m. on Sundays. Owners Fun and Games South has also asked to allow alcohol consumption in the outside courtyard, provide food during evenings, and reduce the number of door staff to 4 on a Thursday and Saturday. But police have urged a council licensing committee to reject the plans on grounds that there have been several late-night violent incidents at the venue in the past few months. The bar's licence was reviewed in November 2010, following a number of assaults reported to police, and in a written report to the committee, PC Alan Reid said there had been 6 assaults at the bar since February 2012, including 3 on door staff. He added reducing the number of door staff would be a major backward step, and that there should be 6 on site as set out after the licence review. The report said, "Hampshire Constabulary would go as far as to state they feel that this condition was one of the most influential in turning this business around and achieving an active promotion of the licensing objectives. Police raised no issue with the provision of food or late-night refreshment. Several residents have also objected to the proposal, arguing it would be a noise nuisance."
Boost for Riding Therapy Centre. A Winchester supermarket has raised almost £2,000 for charity over the last year. Sainsbury's in Badger Farm gave the Hampshire Riding Therapy Centre a cheque for £1,838 following a year of fundraising events. The Riding Centre, based near Coldon Common, was the supermarket's official charity of the year after customers voted to support it. It provides horse riding tuition and therapy to adults and children with disabilities or special needs. Kerry Coutts, founder of the centre, said, "We're really grateful for the fantastic efforts of staff and customers at Sainsbury's. They have really helped to raise the profile of our charity in Hampshire. The money raised by this store in Badger Farm has allowed for us to purchase a new horse for the centre." Patsy Farr, supermarket deputy manager, added, "The money we've raised is really going to help a local charity that's close to many people's hearts in Hampshire, and we're so proud to have had a chance to do this."
Benjamin speaks out on fuel poverty. A Winchester teenager highlighted the impact of fuel poverty when he spoke at the House of Commons. Benjamin Farnes, aged 16, of Colden Common, joined the chief executive of the National Children's Bureau at a reception. They were speaking about the Energy Bill Revolution campaign, an alliance of more than 90 leading charities, unions and businesses, which calls on the government to use the money they receive from carbon taxes to make UK households super energy efficient. Benjamin, a student at Peter Simmons College, said, "Too many young people are missing out because their parents can't afford to pay their fuel bills. I believe the Energy Bill Revolution can solve many problems with one simple solution and lift thousands of children out of fuel poverty. I urge everybody to get involved in the campaign. Through it, we can resolve the devastating effects of fuel poverty on children and young people and create a greener, more sustainable future."
Transport boost for National Park. South Downs National Park has received a major financial boost to help deal with traffic problems. The Department for Transport has given £3.8 million to SDNP, the New Forest National Park, and the County Council to improve public transport in the parks and make it easier to reach visitor attractions. The funding will also be used to promote travelling by bus, bike or rail around the parks by creating cycle and walking routes to stations. Councillor Mel Kendall, the county's executive member for Environment and Transport, said, "While the County Council was the lead authority on this bid, we ensured we worked closely with the National Park authorities and neighbouring councils in its development. I am delighted that we have been successful. This will help us significantly in working towards establishing a number of initiatives with the potential to reduce the impact of traffic and transport on these unique areas of the countryside, famous for their outstanding natural beauty." Trevor Beattie, chief executive of the South Downs Park, added, "Situated in the most populous area of England and as the closest national park to London, we are keen to encourage greater use of public and sustainable transport to and within the South Downs National Park. This funding will enable us to work in close partnership with the local transport authorities to promote and support buses, trains, walking and cycling for both those who live here and those who come to enjoy the South Downs."
Tenants to wait as council debates heating options. Disagreement on biomass system suitability. Plans to upgrade a block of Winchester flats suffering from damp problems have been put on hold. Housing officers are recommending replacing storage heaters with biomass heaters at 4 tower blocks in Winnall. The council is trying to upgrade the heating system after residents complained about damp in their homes last winter. Although officers said problems were caused by tenants' use of the property rather than design or repair faults, they agreed to explore heating improvements earlier this year. Biomass systems burn wood pellets, chips or logs to provide warmth and are popular in Austria, Germany and Switzerland. But the councillors criticised biomass technology and asked officers to provide alternative options. Councillors will now have a full briefing on all possible options for the flats and a report will come back to the committee in September. The cost of the scheme is estimated to be between £750,000 to £1 million, but the council is considering using the government renewable heat incentive fund to cover part of the investment. The towers contain 156 flats in 4 blocks, Braxton, Earl, Craddock and Dennett houses, all named after former Winchester mayors from the Tudor times. Meanwhile, council chiefs are set to spend an extra £300,000 on improvements on another Winchester estate. The City Council has a £500,000 surplus in its housing account and plans to use more than half of it in Stanmore. The cash will be used to improve communal housing blocks and tackle parking problems.
More Exercise Plus classes. A Winchester charity has launched an exercise class to help elderly people recovering from falls. Winchester Live at Home Scheme is holding Exercise Plus every Thursday afternoon at St Mark's Church in Oliver's Battery. Classes are taught by a qualified instructor and are designed for people looking to recover stability and confidence after a fall. Exercise Plus classes are already popular at the United Church in Jury Street. The classes are being funded through the City Council's Small Grants Scheme. For more details or to book a place, call 01962 890995. I'll repeat that, 01962 890995.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Karen Cream.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. And please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.